Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Well, good morning, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins, and this morning in the studios with me here at Fernwood are Hal and Rainer James. Hal is chairman of our watchdog committee, and Rainer is chairman of our newly formed Legislative Action Committee. They're both hard workers and stay busy and got a lot to tell us about this morning. Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, first thing, Hal, this past Wednesday, on the front page of the Sun Journal, was a picture of a group of CCTA members that went to the local commissioners meeting to oppose the consent agenda. You want to tell us a little bit about the history about that?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. I would. I was really, really pleased with that turnout of people to support that watchdog function, which one of our functions, I wanted to tell you a little more about it, but we can back up to it, but about this meeting. We were there to hold our elected representatives and members of the Board of Commissioners to the standards that are stated in our mission statement. And, of course, one of them is smaller government and less intrusive government. And we feel like the Sunshine Laws of North Carolina are intended to preserve that. They're well written and they're clear. And we should know, be able to know what's going on at all the Board of Commissioners meeting. And they were taking up the what they call the consent agenda. And a consent agenda is kind of, it isn't anything to get all and up in arms about, you wouldn't think. It's just the things that they consider routine. But somebody has obviously decided what's routine and what isn't, so there's a list of them. And I don't know who does that, maybe the county manager. But anyway, I've seen consent agendas really abused in other places, other
right.
towns, other cities, other government entities, and by example, our own school board, where you can go to the school board meetings and not really know what's going on. Because everything gets passed in the consent agenda.
Right. Well, for our listeners that don't really understand that, consent agenda is used by a lot of boards.
It's
main purpose is to speed things along, not to waste a lot of time on things that really don't need to be discussed.
Right.
It's just standard procedure.
Right. But we had two provisions that they were going to include in their consent agenda provisions that we were pretty upset about. And one of them was that the county manager or the county chairman, which we objected to, less being able to do this, but they would be able to, at the last minute, put new items on the consent agenda at their own discretion, which would be an easy way to slide things through if they were trying to do that. We really strongly objected to that. And the other thing that we were somewhat concerned about was that budget items could be part of the consent agenda.
All right.
And budget items are often used to explain who's what government entity or what 501(c) or what private company is getting money from the taxpayers. And we want to know. And some of them we'd like to know if they get a few hundred dollars. Well, they knew in advance that we had some, I think the commissioners knew in advance we had some concerns about that. And so it was modified to have anything less than $5,000. Could be in the consent agenda as far as budget adjustments were concerned. Well, in an earlier meeting, I heard the finance officer make the statement that in most counties, budget adjustments are in the consent agenda. Well, that may be true, but I found changes of $500,000, $750,000, really large amounts of money being swapped around through these consent agendas in other counties and other places. One of them, Raleigh, a big city, had one that was $5 million.
Right.
So, it can be abused. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
And so we wanted to make a stand against that. And I called out to other CCTA members to help me have an objection to that. We wanted to be orderly and polite. We had some nice little signs made up, and about 10 of us showed up in front of the meeting place half hour before the meeting started, and we just displayed our signs to the passengers, to people going by in cars, and pedestrians coming up the sidewalk, and the commissioners as they arrived, and spoke to them, and they smiled back and things like that. But we just wanted to let them know that we had our concerns and we were going to address them. One thing that happened that I was really pleased with was Commissioner Steve Tyson came over, had conversations with several members of our group, was really interested in finding out which parts of it we objected to, and said that he would help try to help mediate some of these concerns that we had. And he was good to his word, and later on he did that.
Yeah, right. The things that we were really opposed to actually got modified and removed from the
exactly. Right. And I don't know if you saw this morning's newspaper, the Sun Journal, but it had a picture of us out in front and above the fold, as you like to say. It was it was presented where people, it would catch their attention, and people know that we were out there, and not in huge force, but on a holiday weekend, we were there, a lot of us, 10 of us, and 4 of us actually made petitions about what we came there to talk about.
Well, I think it's a prime example of what grassroots efforts can accomplish, and you already, through what you've just told us, given a good example and description of what the Watchdog Committee is all about. It's watching over the elected officials. Our book study on the 5,000-year leap, which is based on the 28 principles of liberty. Principle number 2 is a free people cannot survive under a Republican constitution unless they remain virtuous and morally strong.
Absolutely.
Well, history has shown us that a lot of our elected officials lack those virtues.
You're right.
That's why we have, it's not that we're opposed to a consent agenda, because like I say, it's used broadly in other boards and all, but we just have to keep an eye on the way.
Right. Another thing I'd like to mention, there's several things I could about that meeting, but Kim Fink, who's our kind of resident expert on Common Core, made her 4-minute talk. We're only allowed to speak for 4 minutes, and she talked about the things that were happening there with the school board and the state, at the state level, the Department of Public Instruction, and our own local school boards, and things that she was concerned about. And she did a great job. But you've mentioned the founding principles, or you mentioned something about our history.
Right.
And founding principles is one of the things that, by law, they're supposed to be teaching, and they're really working hard to circumvent that for some reason, and they're not following the letter of the law. And she made that clear. And she also talked about the way our members of the school board are elected. They're elected. First, they have to be elected in the primary from their own district, and then they'll have to go to the general. But in the general, they are elected countywide instead of just by the district.
Right.
And Kim wants to know why. You know, the Board of Commissioners, all the other elected officials are elected to represent a specific district within the county.
Right.
Why shouldn't the school board be the same way? And she said, well, they got an answer back from the school board that they thought that made their comments more valid for the entire county than just for their own particular region. And Kim made the point, well, what about the Board of Commissioners? Now, they look out for the whole county, but they also are representative of a district within the county.
Right.
And that seems to work very well in government.
That's the way it used to be here. There was a law, several years back that changed it to the way it is now. So we just want it to go back to where all of them are the same.
Yeah.
All the elections are the same.
And we didn't petition only on the consent agenda. There were other issues that we had concerned about it. And Kim's husband, Glenn Fink, brought up the subject of the inpatient hospice, which we feel is another intrusion of the government on private medical practices. And as you know, our next meeting is going to be on the certificate of need,
right,
which is another government intrusion on private medical practices.
Well, before we move on from the commissioner's meeting, there is one thing I'd like to comment on. I noticed a tweet that was sent out by one of the reporters at the Sun Journal who was tweeting during the meeting. And evidently I wasn't there that night. I had to work, so I don't have personal.
You can't be everywhere, Rick.
Yeah. But anyway, she tweeted out that during the public comment, and I don't know who was speaking, one of the county staff, they were making comments out loud, and one of the comments was, "This is ridiculous." And that's just an example of the attitude. They forget who they work for.
Absolutely.
You know, these people are working for the taxpayer.
I'd be curious to know what we had to say that was ridiculous to him.
I don't know, but evidently
something. It could have been a woman.
Right, right. But evidently they didn't appreciate the fact that the people that are funding their paychecks had something they wanted to voice their opinion about.
Get off their chest, right.
Yeah. Well, Rick, there is a natural tension there, because somebody who works for the government, their enlightened self-interest lies along the lines of increasing the size of their kingdom, the number of people they supervise, the number of clients they service, the amount of dollars that flows through their operation. The taxpayer, on the other hand, has other uses for that money rather than shelling it out.
Right.
So there is a very natural tension, and it's, I don't know what to do about it, except that the people we elect to represent us need to be keenly aware of it and keep it in line.
Oh, that takes us to principle number three. The most promising method of securing a virtuous and morally stable people is to elect virtuous leaders.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, on Raina's point there, there are two departments in the government, the Craven County government, that seem to be constantly growing. One of them is the Social Services Department, and the other is the Health Department. Both of those, I see, is kind of welfare. It's trying to take care of people who are less fortunate than they are. But that particular aspect of government has gotten way out of hand. I mean, it's 40%. I don't know if it's 40% is an exact figure, so I won't throw that out. I get chastised often for speaking off the top of my head in generalities, but I know it's at least a third and maybe more of the county's budget goes to those two types of services.
All right. And the problem, you know, we're not against helping people in need. The problem is the fraud, waste, and abuse that's associated with those programs.
Exactly.
I mean, and you know, anybody that ever goes grocery shopping or just leaves their home and goes out, the fraud is obvious. I mean, you see it all the time.
Right.
And Rick, yes, I want people who are truly needy to be looked after, and I want to do my part in doing that, but I don't think it's a proper function of government. And I know the North Carolina Constitution puts it there.
Right.
But to me, it is a private thing. The Bible exhorts individual people to do unto the least of these. It's not something that is a natural government function. It's a natural human, one person to
right.
another.
Right, absolutely. You're 100% correct on that. And the way it used to be was you provided something that would support the basic needs of life, food, water, you know, shelter. That's what you were, not a lifestyle.
Right.
Not to put you in the latest automobile on the market and have the fanciest cell phone out there.
Like an emergency service for hurricanes or floods or whatever, and get the victims into a place to sleep and some food and water and, you know, necessities.
Right. And we're reaching a point where the people that are financially supporting all this through their taxes are not able to live the same lifestyle as some of the people that are not working at all. They're just collecting all these different benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that even in some of the churches, they have classes mm-hmm. to teach how to take advantage of these government programs so you can get the most out of them that you can get.
Wow.
Before we leave the subject of that meeting, there is one more thing I'd like to bring up. There was an attachment 7 to last Monday night's agenda that had to do with the Social Services Department's concerns about security out there. Now, for a couple of meetings, as you know, that was a hot subject, and people were really concerned because of what had happened was the director of Social Service had asked for to not let people go into the building carrying a weapon.
Right.
Now, there's no law against going into that building carrying a weapon. Except for the employees. The employees there are not allowed to carry by some sort of ordinance or regulation. I don't know what. But they were getting concerned that I understand the most problem was when they were giving out, what they call it, energy assistance checks or something like that. And we only get 100. Well, the person who's number 101 might be mad about it. You know,
mm-hmm.
The 100 people in line in front of them got some subsistence.
Right.
And so, anyway, they act like they were concerned about that. There'd been a lot of discussion about it. And then on attachment 7, they had a report back from a committee of commissioners and some of the staff that had gone over and worked on this problem and had their solution all outlined. And the solution seems to have been accepted by all the members of the board. There'll be no more discussion of it. There'll be another opportunity to petition about it. So much is crammed into these meetings. The agenda was 3/4 inch thick, printed on one side in small print on, you know, a paper.
Right.
That much of it. And to go through it and pick out what you want to talk your 4 minutes about, or maybe you can get 3 or 4 other members of the Watchdog Committee to go in and talk about certain things. There's no way that you can actually get enough adequate citizens' input in that volume of business that they're going to look at in one night's meeting.
That's right. Well, guys, we're going to have to pause here and hear from our sponsors so we can pay our bills, but we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm with Hal and Rainer James this morning, and we just got through talking about the Watchdog Committee. Rainer, you're chairman of the Legislative Action Committee. That's one that we formed this year. And you interface with all the other committees.
Absolutely. I see our job is, at least in part, to support them, because the other committees have legislation that they'd like to see happen. They've let that be known, and this is kind of reinforcements.
Well, give us an example of some of the legislation that we're trying to get before our legislators.
Well, one is the Second Amendment Committee. Mark Jones has wanted several different things along those lines. And Senator Norris,
one was interposition.
Yes. And another was constitutional carry.
Constitutional carry.
There are some bills on that subject that have been proposed in this session. Norm Sanderson's North Carolina Firearms Freedom Act is a good beginning. I'd love to see it strengthened, but I do appreciate a good beginning.
And just briefly, that's firearms that are manufactured in North Carolina.
Firearms and ammo.
And ammo.
And the firearms have to be stamped on a metal piece with the point of origin
right.
on it.
Well, Governor McCrory is so anxious to spend that money to get companies to come to North Carolina. Maybe we could pass that law and get a gun manufacturer to come down and get them started.
Right.
Well, I think we have about six, but most of them are supporting military and police and so on.
Right.
Not
right.
Individual
so
sales.
It's not like
well, that law, if it passes, would prohibit federal regulations on the weapons and ammo.
Federal employees from coming into North Carolina and taking those
right.
weapons or that ammo. Or anybody, sheriffs or anybody within North Carolina for helping to enforce it. The penalty, however, for not observing that, it's only a misdemeanor. So one of the things we've talked to Norm about is perhaps making that a felony. And he was going to look into seeing if he couldn't strengthen it as it's working its way through committee and so on. And I hope that's actually going to happen.
That sounds good. Well, the constitutional carry, just for our listeners, you know, there are a number of states already that are constitutional carry. And basically what that is the Constitution is your gun
Absolutely.
Permit, the
Second Amendment.
Alaska has done something interesting with that. That is a constitutional carry state. However, they have a permitting process to get a concealed weapons permit
right.
because of so many states being reciprocal. So they want people who travel to have the option of using a permit issued in that state to hunt or do whatever.
Well, now there was a bill introduced at the federal level to try to do something about
reciprocal.
Yeah,
reciprocity.
That's it. That's the
reciprocity. There you go.
Reciprocity for all states to get all the states on board through federal legislation. I don't know what the status of that is, but you know, it's not that we don't want to do background checks and make sure that criminals and maybe mentally disabled people are out here buying weapons. But the Second Amendment says that our rights will not be infringed.
And actually, I think maybe I'm a little more radical than you are, Rick, because my feeling about that is the Constitution says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So until and unless someone does something inappropriate with some
Well, that was
weapon,
my point. As long as you're
perception.
A law-abiding citizen.
Sure.
But
okay.
If you're a convicted felon, you've already done something inappropriate.
It reminds me of an old country song. What part of shall not be infringed, don't you understand?
I think it's what part of no, don't you understand?
Yeah. All right. Well, what other issues are at the top of the chart right now? I know the certificate of need is one.
Absolutely. And there's been email circulating. We were in Raleigh last week, and next week there are several certificate of need or CON reform bills making their way in the Senate and in the House. Representative Avila has one. it would remove the requirement for a certificate of need from several different kinds of medical facilities, including an ophthalmologist operating room for cataract surgery right. and the like, and several other classes of things.
Like Dr. Jay Singleton has tried
to do. Exactly.
We had him on our show a few weeks back, and he is our guest speaker this month.
I'm looking forward to that.
Right. On the 21st, he will be talking about the certificate of need. And for those that don't understand what it is, it's a law that requires you to have this certificate to open a surgery center. And the problem with it is large hospitals and medical outfits buy these things up and just to prevent competition.
Yeah, stockpile them. They may have certificates of need for five ORs. They may have one that's in full operation and perhaps a second one that they use occasionally. The other three, so far as the regulators are concerned, are operating rooms in existence. But no, not in the real world. They just hold in these pieces of paper.
Just to keep anybody else from opening one because we already got an excess of operating rooms.
Yeah, and there's some really interesting things about in terms of physician-owned ones charge less, and they actually tend to be safer because the procedures being done in them are done by staff who do that kind of thing over and over again. They don't do an appendectomy one time and a deal with broken bones another and then do eyes after that. It's eyes all day long, for example.
Well, that's some good pieces of legislation to be working on and pushing. I know there's tort reform.
I started to say there's a hearing that's going to be, let me back up. We've visited a lot of legislators, and we've gotten this information from several different sources. It is in committees when hearings are held on the various bills that they sink or swim.
Right.
So if you wait till they get to the floor, you don't have any chance to influence at all. You need to let the committee members know how you feel and sort of lobby them. There's going to be a committee meeting next week on one of these bills, so we need to get a group of people and get there.
I'm sorry, Rainer, but we only have a little time left, and we're going to have to take another break. So let's break right here to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. We only have 1 minute left, so I'm a push you a little bit to move on and just quickly tell us when y'all take a trip and go to Raleigh. What is it you do there? You meet with different legislators, both sides of the aisle?
Yep, we've tried it both ways. Sometimes we have specific appointments with people in advance. The last time we didn't because we wanted to try to see 14 different legislators. We saw a number of them, not all, but we took a letter of introduction to CCTA to them. And we hear regularly that personal phone calls and personal letters, particularly handwritten, have most impact.
Right.
Well, I figured hand-delivered might up the ante a little bit. So we saw a lot of people, met a lot of legislative assistants, and man, is that a sharp group of people.
Well, I'm sure it made a big impact. Folks, that's our time for today. Rainer and Hal have been very busy, as you can see, and CCTA is actively involved in trying to make a difference out here in government, and we could use your help. So the third Tuesday of every month, we meet at Stanley Hall Ballroom. More information about our organization is on our website at cctaxpayers.com. We'll see you again next week.